Good Sunday morning once again, and welcome to Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. We are talking computers in this segment of the program with Adrian Minerick, who is the dean of the new College of Computing at Michigan Tech. Adrian, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming in. This is something that surprised me, I guess, when this first came out, that Michigan Tech was going to start a College of Computing. We've been teaching computing classes for, what, half a century at this point? Why now do we suddenly elevate this up to college-level status?
That's an excellent question. So Michigan Tech has always been known for our outstanding engineering programs. And what's transpired over the last couple hundred years is we've had an industrial revolution, which is focused very heavily on the physical technologies. And we're seeing this movement into cyber-related technologies, and that's the next revolution. There was a book written a couple years ago about the fourth industrial revolution, and in it, it details how many of these cyber technologies are transforming already and will continue to transform our society. And so equipping our students with the tools and preparation for this transformation is really important. And that's why we sat down. There was a working group that examined a large number of options and came to the recommendation that we really needed to stand up a College of Computing that was organized and at the same level as the College of Engineering in order to equip our students for this future.
Many would say that that revolution has already arrived and is well underway.
That's correct.
I thought about this room as I thought about this program and what this room would have been like when I started in radio 45 years ago. Mm-hmm. We would have had several turntables in here to play vinyl records. We would have had a number of tape cartridge machines to play commercials off quarter-inch tape. We would have had several reel-to-reel tape recorders. We might have had a cassette player in here. We'd have had all sorts of fancy equipment. Now, there are three computers in here. This has completely revolutionized our industry, and I'm sure it has completely revolutionized many others the same way.
Well, absolutely. And what we're seeing, for instance, is that our phones have faster processes than the laptop that you're currently using. And that enables a whole next dimension of how these cyber tools are going to be used and what information they're able to place at our fingertips when.
Yeah, because, well, you're slumming it here, I've got to tell you, because this computer runs off Windows XP and the one behind it runs off Vista. So see, you're just really slumming it here because I doubt you've got any of those left at Michigan Tech and nobody's learning Vista anymore, thank goodness. Oh, my word.
But we do have those. Students tear them down and they learn the technology from ground up.
Ground up. Well, this brings me to the next step in this. Mm-hmm. You're starting with these young people at the college level. Mm-hmm. Do we need to be starting this earlier with them? And are we already in some of our school programs?
Oh, most definitely. I have two young kids, and the time from when one went through elementary and the second one is in the middle of elementary, we're seeing coding and computational thinking concepts that are included in that. There are a large number of efforts with Michigan Tech, the MyStar, as well as some others, that look at integrating coding. So coding.org is an excellent resource that many teachers are using, and we will continue to see an awful lot more of this in our K through 12.
Explain to those who don't know what coding is.
So computers are able to follow directions, is basically what it comes down to, and those directions are written out in a language format, and it's ubiquitously termed coding, but it's a series of logic statements and directions that tell information where it will flow and how it will be used.
It can be very complex.
It can be, yes, but it builds from foundations, and complexity is simply layered.
And kids are starting this now as young as?
I would say 8.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
I'm increasingly getting left behind here, Adrian. Well, okay, then let me go to the next question. What about old folks like me? I mean, I didn't grow up with computers. I used a slide rule when I was in college. I can't imagine anybody at Michigan Tech still owns a slide rule.
Oh, yeah.
Do they?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's in a museum someplace?
Yes.
Yeah, but kids coming into Michigan Tech, they've had computers, calculators in their hands since they were babies. I bought my first calculator in the mid-70s when I was in college. They just came out. We were just amazed by them. And I said, when the price gets under $100 for a basic calculator, I will buy one. And I bought one from Radio Shack. And my friends were just so jealous of me because I could do this. We would play with it. You know, we would do addition and subtraction on it just because it was so amazing to see it happen. Mm-hmm. And now look at what we have. We have so much power in our hands here to work with. And kids have this from a very young age. And of course, there's discussion now about whether or not they're not learning some of the basics that go along with it. If you have a child, what's the best way to move forward with them on technology?
I would say just encourage engagement with it. And encourage context, because with all the information that we have at our fingertips, there's also a responsibility of how we interact and how we access that information, and making sure that before we act, we use the complete information. And I think that's extremely important to share with our kids. It's particularly dangerous if we just provide something to our kids and then don't look into the content of that, don't reinforce it from the ethical social context of what that means.
Because we have learned that it can be productive and we have learned that it can be destructive.
Yes.
If kids use it to supplement their studies, if they use it to learn new things, if they use it for growth, that's wonderful. If they spend their entire day playing little games on the computer or go to websites that have inappropriate content, that's not appropriate. Right. And so it's important for us to, as you say, put that in perspective and make sure that our kids are getting along the appropriate way here. For those of us who are older, and I suppose this affects parents to some extent, I'm their grandparents' age at this point. I have grandsons who are in middle school and high school. It's hard for us to keep track of what's going on with the kids because sometimes they know more about the technology than we do.
Yes and no. What we're seeing is that there are some individuals that just treat it as a black box. They don't know how it works inside, and that is particularly concerning. And so the College of Computing in many ways is a means for us to be able to teach what goes behind the screen, what's involved in it, what it's capable of, what it's not capable of, how it's fallible, etc. I also want to point out that for older adults, there are a series of programs in the community that are available through the Portage District Library. And so Dr. Chuck Wallace in computer science here at Michigan Tech has led a team, and they've specifically looked at learning in older adults as well as the way they interact with many interfaces.
Yeah, and I know so many people, and some of them are my age. Now I'm going into my mid-60s. Some of them are not nearly my age, who look at this technology and are just frightened to death by it. They don't want anything to do with it. They don't want to try to understand it. They're scared to death of it. Is everybody capable of understanding computers?
Yes. And especially if the programmers, the people who write the code and the interfaces, do it such that it's user-friendly. If you think back to some of the equipment that you've used over the years, you commented on Vista, for example, some of those were very frustrating to utilize because you knew you needed to do something and it was difficult to figure out how. And that's a user interface issue. But as we learn and as we move forward, those are engineered better such that it is not as difficult to accomplish the exact same task.
And that's, you're certainly right. I mean, excuse me, I go back to my Commodore 64 back in the 1980s, and I first went online with my Tandy 1000, I think around 1988 or thereabouts. I was on Prodigy and things like that, when that was all still very new and very novel. But it was really hard to get things done on a computer in those days. And if you ran into a problem, you did a lot of hunting and pecking and trying and failing and learning to try to overcome that problem. It could take days. It could take weeks to overcome a relatively simple problem. Now, updates are pretty much standard. They come through. You don't have to do them manually anymore. I do very little maintenance on this computer, and I'm thankful for that. Although it scares me a little bit, because now I don't know how much about as much about how this one runs as I did with my Tandy 1000 back in the day. So if something does go wrong on it, I'm not as ready to fix it.
Well, it is the same foundation. And there's just layers that have been added to it. And I think that's a key thing to keep in mind when we get concerned about our students, you know, our K through 12 or other students not spending as much time on those preliminary foundations. If we go back 500 years and the sequence of math that was taught at that point in time, we know so much more now that basically what we have to do is move through those foundations, accept them, and build upon them to be able to add the higher levels. And that's a trend that we're seeing in the computing area, is those foundations are still very important and everything's based on them, but it's important to understand each of the different layers that are there. And
as we get more layers, does that become more challenging?
It does become more challenging, but it's one of the key advantages of a formal education, because then the entire context is understood. And it's kind of dangerous to go through and have somebody learn only one piece, say a language. Oh, I can do Java, I can do, but not understand how that fits within the larger operating system, the architecture, that dimension of it.
I know enough to be dangerous. You know, that's the person who knows, they're sure they know how you can fix, they can fix your computer. Mm-hmm. And 2 days later, your computer's in worse shape than it was before because they don't understand all of the ramifications of the things that they do.
Yes.
So if I'm a young person, I'm talking with Adrian Minerick, who is the dean of the Michigan Tech College of Computing. If I'm a young person today and I'm looking to go into any field, really, I've got to know computers.
No, not necessarily. You know, it's expected that you've used a computer, but not that you know it. And so we have a curricula that starts people, if they have never written a line of code in their life, they can start into the curricula. If they have done an extensive amount, either through FIRST Robotics or other programs in their school, we also have a track for them. And the students graduate equally proficient. They're hired equally proficient. And they're just sought after because of the skill sets and the problem solving that they learn.
So what are the fields that young people who enroll in the College of Computing, what are the specific fields that they are going to be most likely to find work in?
Oh, that's extremely broad. So it ranges extensively. We've seen a massive uptick in the automobile companies hiring our graduates. They hire from the Computer Network and System Administration as well as from the Computer Science and Software Engineering. If you think about it, your car is a perfect example. Used to be an engine on wheels with a frame around it. And now there's all this other level of comfort and information that comes in and leaves that vehicle. You constantly have navigation. There are sensors that are integrated in that. It's all
mine told me my tire was low the other day.
Exactly.
It got the wrong tire.
Oh, really?
It flagged the wrong tire, but at least, you know, it got me to where I needed to be when I checked the first tire. I thought, that's not it. Okay, somebody's got the wrong sensor on the wrong wheel here. I checked the other tires and found it, but it was helpful.
Mm-hmm. So. And each of those sensors, that's a hardware, a physical technology, that's interacting with the software and the interface that's there with you, that you see. And so the cyber technology dimension of that is in every sector in our society. And so it ranges from the traditional that you would think of the Googles and Apples and Amazon and Facebook and those big, to the automotive that I mentioned, to many of the financial institutions, and it's everywhere. And well, our students
people,
are going
people
everywhere.
Used to keep books on paper ledgers.
Yes.
Nobody keeps a book on a paper ledger anymore. You open up your computer, you use QuickBooks or an equivalent program. This also, though, affects people in what we have traditionally known as the trades.
Yes.
Because as you described with the automobile, somebody now who used to be able to churn a screwdriver a little bit and adjust your carburetor now has to have a pretty full knowledge of the computing systems in a whole bunch of different automobiles so that they can diagnose problems, replace boards if necessary, and they need to have all of this computer knowledge now.
Well, even handheld tools, one of the companies we're working with is integrated sensors in there so they can figure out if your drill is about ready to fail and intervene on that. So it's everywhere.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the building industry, you used to sit down with your blueprints and used to spec out estimates for, you know, you had to put materials list together and things like that. Now your computer prints it out and you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, even further than that, the 3D printing technology has reached the point in which they are 3D printing houses and structures. So
I can 3D print a house?
Yes.
All right.
Composite materials that have strength, and you fill every gap so that they're well insulated and sealed, and yes.
Oh, my word.
Cool technology.
And of course, Michigan Tech has been a leader in the 3D printing thing. We've been covering what you've been doing there for a long time. Mm-hmm. That's really been kind of a quiet behind-the-scenes revolution that's going on, but at some point in the near future, that's going to burst out. That's going to become big, and all of a sudden we're all going to have these things, just like we all bought laser printers 20 years ago, and we're all going to be able to make our own knives and forks and things of that nature in our house.
Oh, yeah. Some of my daughter and her friends have received for Christmas 3D printers and put them together themselves, and so it's about $250 to get a 3D printer.
Do they make useful things?
They do. It takes a fair amount of work to, like, if you want to repair something, you know, a spatula, for instance. I had a handle that broke on the spatula, and then drawing that out and designing it and printing it and then replacing the handle on that spatula, I discovered that the polymer's temperature sensitive, so it can't go in the dishwasher. But
oh, okay.
Other than that, it works.
So you're saying we can't print a frying pan?
No, you can't get there.
That won't work. Everybody has gifts. We all have things we do well. We all have things that we're not real good at. There are people who are good at computers. They have that logic in their mind that they can use them, they can write the coding, they can follow all of those things. There are people who perhaps are not. Where does this computer revolution leave people who don't have an aptitude? Or am I wrong about this?
I would challenge that.
And okay.
I would say that there's the ability, many people, if they frame things as a growth mindset, it's like how we think of sports, for example. If you practice more, you get better at it, right? So yes, there are certain dimensions of that, that if you have somebody who has an advantage, for instance, they're taller, possibly they're better at basketball. But we also know exceptions to that, that our very tall individuals may not have the coordination to do basketball. So there's not a prerequisite set to it. It's more about the effort that's put in the practice that's there, the coaching, and the skills. And so somebody either having or not having an aptitude, I would challenge that very strongly.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that, because I was afraid. You told me when we spoke a couple of weeks ago, you told me that, 75% of all jobs within the next few years are going to be computer-based?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics has estimated that 76% of the STEM-related jobs are going to be in the computing areas.
Because that started me wondering who gets left behind. Because if somebody doesn't have that aptitude, then they don't get to move forward. I'm glad to hear that that's not a concern.
Well, if I have my rathers, it would be nobody is left behind. And within our region here in the UP, I think we have a unique opportunity because we have the proximity to some of the best education in the world. And so what we can do to make sure that each of our students, each of our kids growing up in this region can engage and learn in this, it's a key responsibility, and I think it's very important.
This College of Computing, it's a new thing. It's the first one of its kind in the state of Michigan. There are just a few around the nation at this point. That surprises me that we haven't gotten to this point a whole lot faster than we have, considering how pervasive computers have already become in our society. What has been the reaction as you have taken this out to high schools, to guidance counselors, to teachers there, and to students? What have they thought about this?
Wow, that's a really good question. I would say that we have only just begun this. And so I can tell you that from the students that we see visiting us from those high schools and from the guidance counselors, they have been very enthusiastic about it. So we launched this last year, a new degree in cybersecurity, which of course is an area of concern.
Huge concern.
Right. With so much information stored on these computers, making sure that it is safe and not compromised in any way is forefront on a lot of people's minds. And so we have seen a huge growth in the number of students enrolling in that degree program. So it may be too early for me to be able to answer what the actual guidance counselors are saying on it, but their students that they're advising are really making a strong statement of interest in how they want to shape the future.
So you enrolled your first freshman class basically this year?
That's correct. And in cybersecurity, but computer science, okay, software engineering, those are all longstanding.
Yeah, they've just been transferred into now the College of Computing. The College of Computing gives this all what compared to where you were last year at this time?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Why put it into this college? Does it elevate it more within the university? Does it make it perhaps, again, a more attractive sell for students coming in? Because it's not as if we haven't been doing this.
It's all of the above. Previously, there were different degree programs, computing-related degree programs, that were organized into different schools and colleges. And so this was a major reorganization at Michigan Tech that brought all of these together. It's enabled coordinations and collaborations that, it wasn't that they were impossible before, but they were more difficult because they weren't in proximity. So our computing faculty are almost all co-located in the same building now. They meet together on a fairly regular basis, and so they're talking about optimizations to curricula. For instance, this spring, we're piloting a course for all non-computing majors on campus that is an introduction to computational thinking. It does use the Python computing language, but it is really an onboard ramp for everybody else to be able to use these tools.
Okay, we've talked about high school students coming in, young students coming in. Mm-hmm. Is this a career path that somebody might choose midlife? Maybe, you know, they're looking at their path and saying, my career is not going anyplace. The world is changing. This sounds like an opportunity. Are you prepared to take in people who are middle-aged?
Absolutely. And what we find actually is that professionals in their career sometimes will go after master's degree. master's degrees. And so the master's in data science is one that is particularly popular because people encounter large, massive amounts of data from integrated sensors within their existing jobs. And this gives them the tools to be able to utilize and do their job much better. So they collect the data and they're able to very intelligently discern the information that's needed from it.
Well, there's some impressive computer work being done at Michigan Tech right now. I went down to the opening reception that they had, and I met you there first. And I confessed at the time, I felt like a kindergartner. And I am not a computer doofus. I mean, I can get around on my computer. I can do a little peer-to-peer networking here in the building. My friends think I'm a pretty literate guy. Mm-hmm. I felt like a kindergartner. The projects that students are doing at Michigan Tech, the things that are going on there are very, very impressive. And thank you for coming in and keep up the good work that you are doing at Michigan Tech with those kids, because it's certainly, I saw glimpses of the future at that reception, and it was very impressive. Adrian Minerick is the Dean of the College of Computing at Michigan Tech. Thank you, Adrian, for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It was fun talking to you.